Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Tuesday, January 29th, 2013. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. A bill that would relax the wastewater standards placed on cruise ships by Alaska voters is on the fast track in the Senate. The Senate Resource Committee took the first public testimony on Senate Bill 29 last Friday. Proponents of the bill advocated for lower standards, saying that the current law unfairly puts ships under tighter rules than Alaskan communities. The leading opponent of the bill was a marine ecologist who was dissenting from her colleagues on the science advisory panel that studies cruise ship wastewater. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
Governor Parnell is putting his weight behind SB 29 to expedite permitting for cruise lines by this summer. Carla Hart with Alaska Community Action on Toxics urged the Senate Resources Committee to slow down.
The risk of quick action in your part is that you'll betray the voters of Alaska who voted to have this higher standard of clean water.
Hart reminded the committee that the amount of discharge was significant. More people visit Alaska on cruise ships each summer than live in the state. She did not think leveling cruise ship discharge with local communities made sense.
If an Alaska community doesn't meet discharge standards, it's in our front yard. We know where it comes from, we know where it is, and we know who's responsible, and we have to clean it up. Ships discharge anywhere, so remote areas that you might go to for subsistence harvest or for commercial fishing or whatever that you might think are clean because they're far away from any apparent discharge could actually be getting a pretty substantial burden over time and over all of the ships that are going on, because a lot of these things are heavier metals that bioaccumulate.
Alaska voters in 2006 passed the statewide cruise ship initiative, which set wastewater standards at the point of discharge. The Department of Environmental Conservation subsequently granted cruise lines temporary relief from these requirements to allow them time to install the necessary treatment systems. Putting ships on a different standard than Alaskan communities was a major argument against the initiative. John Kimmel with Cruise Line Agencies of Alaska told the committee that Senate Bill 29 would correct a flaw in the law that the voters adopted.
The cruise ships really need to be held to the same standard as everybody else. The original initiative held them to a higher standard than everyone else, and we're just trying to make it, this fix is going to make it more fair for the cruise lines.
A variation of this theme has made it to the table from a different direction. The Alaska Cruise Ship Wastewater Science Advisory Panel, in a preliminary report, says that many ships now meet or exceed Alaska water standards except for a few key heavy metals like copper. The report concludes that there would be little, if any, environmental benefit to requiring cruise ships to adopt additional treatment methods in the future. The report gave advocates of the cruise industry an opening to talk about science. This is Andy Rogers, the deputy director of the Alaska State Chamber of Commerce. He testified that his organization has now adopted a position
advocating for legislation and regulations that are based on sound science as opposed to a precautionary method.
And this is Bob Janes, a tour operator from Juneau.
I am not a scientist, and I think this subject is all about science.
But at least one bona fide scientist who testified before the Senate Resources Committee disagreed with the conclusions of the Science Advisory Panel, which she herself sits on. Michelle Ridgway, a marine ecologist in Juneau, believes the other members of the panel underestimate the potential harm from the consistent discharge of heavy metals.
Quite frankly, I think we'll be appalled by the long-term degradation of our marine ecosystem if we allow this to go forward in this form.
Ridgway thinks applying rules for shore-based treatment plants, which allow for mixing zones to cruise ships, will ultimately create a kind of Sophie's choice for the state.
I believe it will be exceedingly, excruciatingly difficult for Alaskans to concur on where it is within a 0 to 3 nautical mile area, our state waters, that we find it's acceptable for vessels to discharge water that contains copper, zinc, nickel, and ammonia at levels that are known to be acutely and chronically toxic to marine life that we all depend upon.
Chip Toma, president of Responsible Cruising in Alaska, said it was his organization's preference that ships discharge all waste in federal waters. He urged the committee to maintain the water quality standards set by voters, saying it was likely that much of the copper contamination would eventually be reduced as ships modernized with the use of flexible plastic plumbing. Senate Resources Chair Kathy Geisel scheduled another hearing on SB 29 for Monday afternoon, January 28th, at which she invited members to propose amendments. A companion bill in the House, HB 80, was heard in that body's Resources Committee on Monday afternoon as well. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
To view Senate Bill 29, the preliminary report of the Science Advisory Panel, and an open letter from Michelle Ridgway to the Commissioner of Department of Environmental Conservation, you can visit our website, kcaw.org. Commercial halibut fishermen in Southeast will see a small increase in their catch limit for the second year in a row, but the coastwide quota will be down again overall. That's according to recommendations from the International Pacific Halibut Commission, which voted on the numbers at the end of its five-day annual meeting in Victoria, British Columbia, Friday. Matt Lichtenstein reports.
The six-member commission's 2013 catch limits total just over 31 million pounds, which is a drop of another 7.5% from last year. The commission has cut the coastwide catch by about 60% over the past decade in response to ongoing concerns over a decline in the amount of halibut that are big enough to keep in the commercial fishery and less recruitment, which is the number of new fish reaching that size. Those concerns remain in the staff's newest scientific assessment. U.S. Commissioner Jim Balsiger thought it was as good a depiction of the halibut stocks as the commission has had in a long time.
So I think that the message that's contained therein, that the stock is in a period of decline, there is no obvious near-term likely turnaround of those trends, does present to us a strong need for conservation.
But according to Balsiger, the U.S. is concerned about the fisheries as well as the fish stocks. As the commission started discussing the catch limits for each regulatory area, Balsiger referred to a table that showed how various harvest levels could affect the fishery in the future.
Under most levels on that table, that in 1 year, there is not going to be that dramatic an impact on the stock. But I think everyone has to have in mind that that depiction is not particularly bright in terms of rapid recovery.
This year, the commission went with most of the limits recommended by its conference board, which is made up of more than 60 fishing groups from the U.S. and Canada. The vote on the commission was 5-1 for each of the regulatory areas, with U.S. Commissioner Ralph Hoard opposed each time. Hoard spoke just after the vote on Area 2A, the Pacific Northwest. He said he felt compelled to vote for the fish.
While the harvest rate is starting to come down, it is still above our harvest policy. There are many questions remain about bycatch and migration. While I am extremely sympathetic about the impact on current fishermen economics, I'm equally concerned about their future in this fishery. We don't want to end up like the East Coast halibut fishery. There is none.
Under the commission's numbers for 2013, catches will remain roughly the same for the Pacific Northwest and British Columbia areas, where the fleets will be allowed about 1 million pounds and 7 million pounds, respectively. In Southeast Alaska, the recommendations call for a catch of just under 3 million pounds, which is actually up again 13% from last year. Southeast fishermen saw a similar bump last year, but that was after weathering cuts totaling nearly 80% over the previous half decade. According to the Conference Board report, Southeast had the strongest survey results of all areas and strong indications of a recovering stock. It's the only area where the commission went with the limits that staff would have advised under past harvest policy. The other regulatory areas have also faced significant quota cuts over the past several years, and the trend continues, though the reductions will not be as severe as they were in the past. For the Central Gulf, the commission went with a quota of just over 11 million pounds, a drop of about 8%. The recommendations call for a cut of 15% in the Western Gulf and, depending on the area, 15 to 22% less in the Aleutians and Bering Sea. Before they're final, the numbers need approval from the federal governments in Canada and the U.S. The commercial halibut fishery opens March 23rd and closes November 7th this year. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
McDonald's has built its brand around serving lots of cheap food fast, but now the company is trying to change its image so customers will associate the massive franchise with sustainability. As KUCB's Lauren Rosenthal reports, McDonald's is using Alaskan pollock to make its case.
Last week, McDonald's announced that it will stop using other fish and switch to 100% Alaskan pollock in all 14,000 of its United States restaurants. Pollock is served in McDonald's famous Filet-O-Fish sandwich, as well as a new menu item called Fish McBites. With that announcement, McDonald's also unveiled new packaging for its products. The food boxes feature the Marine Stewardship Council's eco-label, which says McDonald's fish is verified as sustainable, wild-caught Alaskan pollock. McDonald's is paying the MSC to use that label, though they won't reveal how much. According to Eric Gonring, a public affairs representative with McDonald's, this is all part of a strategy to attract socially conscious diners.
We know customers are increasingly interested in knowing where their food comes from and also understanding, you know, what a business does to be a responsible corporate citizen.
Sylvia Edifaw, who manages the fishing boats in the Unalaska Fleet Cooperative, says McDonald's new menu and marketing could give Bering Sea fishermen a boost.
The idea is that with the addition of the fish bites, they'd be using more pollock. And also, it certainly isn't going to hurt by putting the MSC label on even their fish sandwiches.
McDonald's started using Alaskan pollock 55 years ago. Since then, the fisheries developed a reputation for sustainability, and it was certified by the nonprofit MSC almost a decade ago. Some environmental organizations have criticized the MSC's standards as being too lax, but regardless, the designation has given Alaskan fishermen an edge over their major competitors in Russia. Alaska's pollock is more expensive but considered more sustainable than Russian fish. But now, the Russian fishing industry is pursuing the MSC designation as well. One segment of the Russian fishery just passed its sustainability study with the lowest required score. Edifaw says that's a big letdown for Alaskan fishermen.
We've worked hard at getting the word out and changing things within our own systems to step up to the plate and be good stewards and be good citizens. And yet the Russian MSC certification is sliding in on the minimum.
Gonring, the McDonald's PR representative, says he can't confirm whether McDonald's would start using Russian pollock in its restaurants if that got the MSC seal of approval. He did say the company is sticking with the MSC label no matter what.
I know that our commitment is to source from 100% sustainable fisheries, and the MSC standard is the one we've chosen.
The MSC is supposed to make a final judgment on the Russian pollock fishery in February. McDonald's new Fish McBites will also debut in February. In Unalaska, I'm Lauren Rosenthal.
KCAW, Sitka.